Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Cal Fritzy. We have a few things to discuss tonight, and I have some people that are going to be joining me tonight. The first hour, I have Jeff Mitchell of the English Defense League, and we are going to be discussing the issues that are going on in Rotherham. I have a memo from the EDL website that I am going to read to you verbatim. And in the second hour, Michael Green will be joining me, and we're going to be talking about what is going on with the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. So there's quite a bit of things that are going to be going on tonight. But the most important news that you really need to hear today is that Freya came out of the Freya came out of the pantry. Okay. Oh boy. Everybody knows that we adopted a new doggy, and Dobby Amber. He's a pretty big boy, and he just wants to be friends with the cat, but. She's having none of it, and his little feelings are getting hurt, and he cries. He's like, I just want to be friends. But she finally came out of the pantry, and so we might be making progress yet. Anyway, sorry about that. It's Friday. TGIF, people. Come on. In other great news, though, I'm also pleased to announce that my Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, just passed a milestone. He is now the 8th longest-serving Prime Minister in Canadian history. When he was first elected, he had a Conservative minority. The second election, he has a Conservative majority. So congratulations to you, Stephen Harper, my Prime Minister of Canada. Very proud day for us here. Now, Jeff is going to be joining me in a moment, but I do have something here that I want to share with you. Of course, you know, wherever Jeff goes, I go. Wherever I go, Jeff goes. You are very fine listeners. You listen to Jeff's program there, the English Defense League Radio, so you are well apprised as to what is going on in Rotherham with these sex grooming gangs. But this memo came out last week, and I'd like to share it with you, and then Jeff and myself will expand upon it. But this is from the official EDL website. What I'm going to do, I'm going to put the link right in the chat room for you right now. Hee, hee, ha, ha, wolf lady. Hey, moving. But this is very, very interesting. We all know what happened in Rotherham. It was the largest sex grooming gang to be uncovered in England at the hands of Muslims. Young girls and boys being sexually exploited, abused, threatened with their lives. Having their families threatened, being threatened to be set on fire if they told anybody that they were being passed around like easy meat. There was finally a report that came out and disclosed all of this. If it were not for the English Defense League, this as well might not have come to light. It is because of the works of the English Defense League that we are apprised of the depravity as we know is Islam. This is yet the latest. So this is from the official EDL website. It's called Vilified, Then Vindicated. The release of the Tuesday, August 26th report on child sexual exploitation in Rotherham has led the whole of England to sit up and take notice. The depravity of the groomers, the gutlessness of officials, and the suffering of the girls is still resonating in the media in conversations, and on social media. The girls will be victims for life. Many will never have the happy motherhood that was their right. And that's true because they were so physically damaged, some of them. Now, there was an EDL demonstration that took place on the 10th of May in 2014. The English Defense League held a national demonstration in Rotherham 4 months ago. Our speakers highlighted the scandal that was being hushed up locally. And as usual, our speakers, even our members, were vilified as stirrers and extremists. Little did our speakers know that the facts were more extreme than we knew back then on the 10th of May. The usual bunch of UAF, and that's United Against Fascism, Antifa, and Hope Not Hate, who tag along behind our demonstration programs, were there as well, screeching their taunts at our marchers and during our speeches. We wonder how they feel now about those 1,400 girls whose abuse they were, in effect, condoning. Now, the aftermath of the release of the CSC report. EDL members in Rotherham watched in dismay as borough council members and other officials sheltered each other and resolved to sit out the storm. The local EDL could see that the storm needed to be roughened up a bit and called a regional EDL demonstration for Saturday, the 13th of September. Now, that's tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. It was to be a regional demonstration. It has now been upgraded to a national demonstration for tomorrow in Rotherham. The response was electric. It was clear that this was going to be a record-breaking regional demonstration. Thus, the coordinator has upgraded it. It is going to be run as a demonstration as part one of a back-to-back pair, with part two being at Downing Street, the demonstration, and that would be the following Saturday, and that is the 20th of September of this month. To maximize the impact of this package, I have reluctantly deferred the regional demonstration scheduled for Colchester on the 6th of September. Like I say, I am reading this memo verbatim, and I will tell you who the author is at the end of it. Our Rotherham demonstration on the 13th of September, part one of this pair, will focus on the child sexual abuse by Muslim rape gangs and the cowardly and weak betrayals by local officials. Our speakers will explain clearly and directly what happened, including new information not yet public. Given the wide national feeling about the sexual abuse of girls, their betrayal, and the betrayal of the community, we hope the people of Rotherham will come and watch our march and listen to our speakers. There may also be other groups in Rotherham on the 13th running their own activities. They will not be part of the English Defense League demonstration, as we will be putting our position to Rotherham, the country and the government, in the EDL style. Not violent, not racist, no longer silent. Our demonstration is not a unity demo. Every participant will be representing the English Defense League and using their presence and their voices to mount a proud English Defense League national demonstration on this day. The EDL demonstration in London, this will be part two. On Saturday, the 20th of September of this month, part two will ram home to the national government the public's outrage and our demand for speedy action to protect girls across the country. This will be a national demonstration at Downing Street. We will highlight the organized child sexual abuse by Muslim men, and our speakers will also range across other areas in which creeping Islamization must be identified, halted, and reversed. We know from the media and from our members that the terrible events in Rotherham has parallels in Rochdale, Derby, Oxford, and other centers. Although we don't know if the scale is elsewhere is even approaches the 1,400 victims victims in Rotherham. We do know that officials and politicians need to be told clearly, loudly, and decisively before they act effectively. We will call on the government to play their part in defending England alongside the English Defence League. Unlike the officials in Rotherham, we will not be intimidated by political correctness. We have never run national demonstrations back-to-back before, and we believe that the extraordinary circumstances demand an extraordinary response. This pair of demonstrations is part of our response, and we are determined to convince the government to get a grip on the problems and meet them with sweeping changes to protect our girls, our culture, and our nation's future. And that is courtesy of Steve Eddowes. He is the chairman of the English Defence League. And with that, I would like to bring on Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Good evening, Kel. Thanks for reading that statement by the chairman. I think in that statement, the reason why, that it's been upgraded because of the soul situation from a regional to a national, and the same with Downing Street. It has to be done, as I said earlier on, it has to be done. As I said on the show earlier on this evening, that this this is unprecedented. We've never had a back-to-back demonstrations before. Not national ones as much. Regional. You know that, Carl. What we've done before in flash demos and things like that. But we've never. This is the importance of the situation. As I say, and it has to be, these politicians, how much more must the people in this country have to put up? How many more generations of children have got to be damaged until they get to grips with it? And it's, you can't treat this with kid gloves. The gloves have got to come off. The people responsible and the people that facilitated these absolutely horrific crimes that's gone on year after year after year. I talk about 16 years. We've had cases back in 1981, 82, girls. So this is a lot further back in time that they're just giving the figures that they've actually come. But we know it goes back to, in the early 80s, even maybe previous before that. And this is how big this is and how much covering up has been going on in that time. And all the time, as you said, we were vilified and now we've been totally justified in everything that we've been speaking. I say we didn't realise the severity of... we knew it was big. We knew it was big, but when you get the figures out there, and that's a conservative figure, as you know, Kel, there's been a lot more. Is more like 1,700 and counting still in Rotherham alone of the children that's been abused by these people. And I've heard some actually horrific stories. I'm going to say one that's going to actually put a bit of a shock element in these people, but one girl, and I won't go into many more details, but this one will really shake a lot of people up, actually had her tongue nailed to a table for refusing the advances. They forced her tongue on top and they put a nail through her tongue. Ladies and gentlemen, your audience out there, Kel, this is how severe that is. Young girls have been doused in petrol, threatened if they don't have sex with a group of people that they were going to be satellite. The stories are out there. We've talked about this before, Mikkel. They're out there. But when we actually talk about it, like being on the show this evening, and actually the gravity of the whole thing, it even blows me away. And I'm pretty hardened to what's been going on over the years. You know that yourself, Kel. Kel knows me pretty close, and she knows the way that I think about things, and it's even shook me, and I'm pretty hardened. I've been hardened to the stories that comes out, because of the, you know, it's to think of that all these kids that was crying out for help, and the establishment around them were basically treating the children with contempt, telling them to go away. This is what's got me more than anything. It's preying on my mind. And it's like many of our members out there. This is how it gets you, because it could be our children. It could be your children, ladies and gentlemen. You know, and it just, as you say, Kel, you know, tonight, as I say, it's just it's the eve of the national demonstration tomorrow. And I'll be doing a bit of a debriefing on Sunday. But I know this is so important, this one, right, you know. But I've got to thank you for allowing me to take part in your show this evening, Kel. It's also an honour and privilege to be, you know, part of your team, sort of when
absolutely.
When I can, like, you know.
Absolutely. Here in North America, we have been following this with avid interest, and in that this is unlike anything we have ever seen globally. This being disclosed, 1,400 girls and some boys, of course. We are wondering, what is the mood, as it were, in England? Are the masses, the sleeping masses? We always seem to deal with sleeping masses. Is the general populace waking up to this? Is this being discussed everywhere and anywhere? I do look at some of the dailies out of the UK, and I do notice that the comments are becoming much more outraged about this. And when you go to the newspapers and you read an article, the comments are much more enlightening than the article itself. I do notice that there is growing outrage. Are you seeing enough outrage over this, Jeff?
Well, we definitely are seeing a mood swing in this country. We've discussing that earlier on, that there has been, you know, even the media has been, they've got no choice. It's out there. It's right in their faces now. The things that they try to keep in a low key is out there. They've got to report on it. That's it. They can't be silent no more. They can't be silent on these issues. They've always been totally against us. That's why they've never reported on what we said. They've always been against everything that we stand for, what we do. Simply, they're toeing the line, you know, the political correct line, which has caused this problem. We've got to lay it down to political correctness in a big way, because, you know, the police, social services were scared of getting a label, being called a racist. If you mention Pakistani Muslims were causing these problems, you know, they were too scared. But and all the time, they was not courageous enough to stand up and speak out about it. All the time, this issue went unabated, and you know, it went on for year after year after year. So there's a lot of people that's involved in this big. It's a scandal, isn't it, Kelly? It's a scandal.
Oh. I have a clip that I'm going to play in a moment, but what the EDL is doing, what you are doing, Jeff, and boy, do I ever commend the English Defense League, because back-to-back national demos, you're right, that is unbelievable. I am sure that there will be quite a turnout, and Jeff, maybe tomorrow you and I, we can get on the Skippity Skype and see if we can't cyber-attend that together tomorrow, if we can find a link somewhere.
Yeah,
but,
hopefully there might be a live leak or something. When I was at the media meeting, we was talking about this, and I did raise the point of we should, because there's so many people are following what we do, that it'd be nice to have a live leak. So hopefully we can check it out tomorrow ourselves, go on, maybe we can find one, and we can follow exactly how the situation on the ground there. Because we also, Kel, we got to mention about the rolling demo that's been underway since the story broke. It's been 16 days today, or 17 days today.
Yep, it's over 2 weeks.
Mr. Andrew H. started it off in Belgium.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, expand on that. This is absolutely phenomenal, people. And Jeff, tell people what the English Defense League is doing in terms of that rolling demo.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, as I say, when the story broke and one gentleman, one of our ROs, took it upon himself to travel down to Rotherham and to do a sit-in. He sat outside the police station, and, you know, the power of the internet, the Facebook, the social media, before he knew it, there was people gathering, and people started bringing tents, and, we've got a tent city, basically, outside Rotherham Police Station. And the support from, I've got to say, the support from the community, the Rotherham community, has been totally outstanding. It's a, do you know what, Kel? I've got to say it now. It's the first time I've ever said this, but I'll say it the way I feel it myself. It's like the, you know, when we was in the Second World War, it's that like Dunkirk spirit, you know, that this has to be done. It's just what needs to be out there. And this is what it is. It's the whole people, the community as a whole, our members, they had the phone calls, you know what it's like, your phone dies, and they've been taking their phones, they've been charging their phones up, they've been taking food down to them, you know, flasks of tea, this, that, and the other, milks taken to the guys that sit outside, and the ladies, not forget the ladies as well, you know, there's quite a few of them, and people from different sides of the country have been coming up, you know, from one side of the country to another, and to join what we've been doing. And this isn't about the status of what the EDL was, but it's what's been going on in this one town, one city, is resonated around the whole country, that people have took it upon themselves. We must be there. We must support the girls. We are EDL, but we're there for the girls. And we always have been. And that's what I would say. It is a like a Dunkirk spirit. And the people have been marvellous, girl. The people of Rotherham, a big salute to them all, because what they've had to endure. They've seen it happen, and you know, when they report anything themselves, they've been told to go away. And if you say too much, we'll arrest you for some sort of racial comment or something like that. You know the way that it was for many years. But now the lid's off. But we got this one person who's still standing his ground, and he's the one who should have been the first one to go. Of course, that was Sean Wright, who's still in a position. He was totally took to pieces yesterday, and he was still smug. He walks out before the end of the proceedings, and one of the people that was on the committee was so disgusted, he resigned his position in disgust at this person still being allowed to wear the uniform of the police commissioner. And all the time, he knew what had been going on, in Rotherham, and decided, it's not just me, there's lots of other people involved. Well, you know, he's the top of the pile, and as far as I'm concerned, the head should roll from right from the top position right down to the bottom. And a lot of them have took it upon, well, there's been a few of them that have actually fallen on their sword and resigned, so it should be. In fact, I think there should be criminal proceedings against them all, for all the poor victims out there. It's a criminal offence. It's got to be, Kel. Degradation of duty, conspiracy to spare silence, conspiracy to silence, which I had a show called, that we said this is what it was all about, conspiracy of silence. And, of course, conspiracy in that one is a big criminal charge. I should think so, Kel. If you stay silent about something,
I would think so, too.
Great.
No, I understand. Yeah, I understand that there was one person that did resign. And her name is, let me just bring up my notes here. Where did she go? Her name is, she was the Deputy South Yorkshire Police and Crime
That's
Commissioner,
right.
Tracy Cheatham. And she has resigned over this. But the one person that refuses to resign is the South Yorkshire Police and Crime Commissioner, Sean Wright. He insists that he will not leave his post. Now, there are a lot of victims coming out saying that the authorities knew for years that this was going on, yet they refused to do anything. It took an independent commission with the help and the urgings of the EDL to expose this. There is a lot of people that are trying to downplay this. Joyce Thacker, she told a meeting that the agencies need to retain a sense of proportionality with regards to the widespread sex abuse scandal in Rotherham, and that this, ladies and gentlemen, we're reminding you, this spans 16 years. This is unbelievable to me, Jeff, in that these authorities, these people in position of trust, They had ideas that this was going on, but they refused to act upon it because they were more frightened about seeing as being racist as opposed to helping these young people.
What can I say? I was nodding my head to what you said there, Kel, because that is the case. I'll say once again, the degradation of their duties. They're put in these positions. Don't forget, these police commissioners, Kel, are paid up about £100,000 annually. Between £60,000 to £100,000. No wonder Sean Wright, because he's never going to get a job again. Once he does step down, what's he going to do? Who wants to employ someone like him? His picture's been out. It's been on the television. You see it on the TV, on Sky News. They were showing that one of these one of the victims' sister, the way that she had a go at him and told him to step down, and he wouldn't even look at her, Kel. He wouldn't even look at her.
Yeah.
Treated that lady with contempt. Thinks armor. He thinks he's above the law. Because the thing is that our people have been saying it, like the politicians, that there's nothing, they can't remove him. It's the people that elected him needs to do the business, basically. So so he's going to sit there. And I've said this before, he just needs his wages cut. He just needs not to get a wage packet coming in. He needs to know that there's not going to be no golden handshake for you. You have done an absolutely horrific job of doing what you've done. When he was in charge of the children, the part of the thing, then the Labour Party decided that he wasn't very good to have on board, so he resigned. But he refuses to give up the police commissioner's job, and I don't think that he'll have to be removed. He's not gonna fall on the sword, is he? This is it. It's quite obvious. And he does have to be. There's got to have some sort of criminal procedure. I think his money should be suspended until it's been totally everything's out there, and and he should go, because the people of Rotherham have lost their trust. Once you lose your trust in the police commissioner, he's got to step down, isn't he?
Oh yeah.
You're not going to trust the police where they've got a police commissioner like him in charge. It's bringing the whole of the police into disrepute. Is that the word, disrepute?
Oh yeah, disrepute. Absolutely. I have a clip here that I'm going to play. As a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with my show tonight, but I was speaking with Jeff on the Skippity Skype earlier, and we were talking about this, and I said, would you want to come on the program tonight? I know it's late for you, but would you like to come on the program and explain it to some of the North American listeners that maybe do not catch the EDL because of the time differences? And Jeff gracefully agreed. I'm keeping you up so late, Jeff, but
it's my pleasure to be here, Kel, and as you say, you have a great show, and we've got to put it out there, what's going on, and to cover everything that has gone undisclosed for such a long time. And there'll be more things that come out at the demonstration tomorrow. There'll be things that be talked about, the speeches that has been undisclosed before. So, I think people should stay very closely tuned to what's going on, because, you know, ladies and gentlemen out there, I'm not privy to exactly, but I do know it's very important of what will be disclosed tomorrow. And as I say, we'll just have to see after that, and I think it's going to be massive. But yeah, no, Kel, it's an honour to be on your show this evening, and as I say, but at the same time, I do feel a little bit deflated with the whole situation before. Is it the gravity of it? My poor nation, my poor people, to what's been brought upon them by these spineless politicians have been allowing these things to happen. And it's like bolted, you know, looking the door after the horse is bolted, the stable after the horse is bolted, isn't it? And one of these girls even said that. Yes, there's an inquiry in that, but that doesn't take away the suffering. It doesn't take away my memories. It doesn't take away my flashbacks to certain situations, because they've got to live it for the rest of their lives. That's what I mean, Kel. That's why I get quite emotional, and why I got emotional earlier on. It's just the plight of my poor, you know, poor kids in this country. And this is just one town, ladies and gentlemen, one town. As I said before, there's a lot more to
just
come.
Just one town, yeah.
Just one town. And as you know, Kel, we've at least 40, between 40 to 60 more towns. We haven't got to the bottom of this yet.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh, no. I mean, you do. This is the thing, Jeff. And as soon as this story, well, when I first heard about it, I heard it through Jeff. And you and I, we were... You were sending me links, and I'm like, Jeff, what's this? And I'm reading, and my eyes are widening like saucers. I'm like, what? And like, we could have just peeled the onion. I'm like, I was speechless, and I'm frantically speaking with Jeff. I'm going, I can't get over, what is this? Like, what? It's just, you would never, ever think that such Islamic grooming gang could grow so large. And you know what? What Jeff said, the authorities knew about it. And Jeff, I have a little clip here. I have two clips I'm going to play, but this one I want to play. And this is courtesy of the Daily Mail. And this is a Rotherham grooming victim. And she says the authorities knew for 2 years this was going on. So, sorry, I got myself a little pop-up here, Jeff. Doesn't that figure? I'm doing this through my speakers. I didn't download this, folks, so I have to tolerate the pop-up, but it'll be done in, 10 seconds. Here we go.
Well, I just turned 14 and he was 24. He just got out of prison, and straight away we kind of got involved and spent a lot of time together in total for nearly 2 years, I think it were. And we had a sexual relationship, which I thought he was my boyfriend. The more time we got to spend together, he changed quite a lot. He became quite violent and possessive, very controlling. At that point, I thought I really was in love with him, so I found it quite hard to break away from it. It was about 2 years ago I started seeing things on telly and in newspapers, and things just started to slip into place. I kept thinking, well, that kind of sounds a bit familiar with kind of my relationship with him, what I thought was a relationship. And it does show it kind of takes a while to sink in. I think part of me is still in shock that it actually happened, not just that it actually happened, but that so many people turned a blind eye to it. And I want to know why people turned a blind eye to it. It wasn't just on several occasions. I was in a sexual relationship with him for 2 years and in contact with him every single day, which police saw me maybe 3 to 4 times a week with him. There were so many occasions and so many people that didn't stop it that it should have been stopped. You know, even in my records alone, they even refer to him as my boyfriend. But on separate sheets, it will say that he's a pimp and he's a danger to children. I can't believe they've gone this long and not done anything. In fact, I remember my social worker, she actually liked him. She'd have a laugh and a joke with him and call him my boyfriend. He attended, you know, even doctors or hospital appointments with me, things like that. It was treated as a normal relationship. That's how I've always seen it. They knew how old he was. They knew he'd been in prison. They knew that he, you know, there could be a danger to other children as well. They knew full knowledge of it.
Unbelievable, Jeff.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's typical of what we hear. This is just one young lady speaking about what happened to herself. There's a lot more harrowing stories out there, which we've often talked about, haven't we? You know, as I say, the one that got me was the story related to the girl having a tongue nailed to a table. I mean, can you believe it, Kel?
Yeah.
Can you believe it? It's so evil. It is. it's a total evil, you know, an evil entity that we've got out there, and it seems such a shame that after, you know, so many of the, you know, our young kids have been used and abused this way, and it went on for such a long time, unabated for such a long time, when they could have done something, and they were just too scared in case they rocked the boat. And, you know, they stirred up the conspiracy of silence. They went against the conspiracy of silence, scared for their lose their you know, their way of life. Because they get paid good money. They all get pretty good money.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't want to rock the boat. And as far as I'm concerned, money doesn't come to it. When it comes to, you know, a precious commodity, our children, money doesn't come into it, is, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And as I say, these people should... I don't know how they sleep. I don't know how anybody other than sleep at night. And
that,
my day,
that,
they
that,
do.
That is... like, that's what I wonder too, Jeff. And when I was doing research for this story and I was listening to these tapes, I mean, like... I'm sorry, but I still tear up about it. I'm just so distressed by this. These were vulnerable people. These were young people. Now these authorities, some of them refusing to step down, like, that is Sean Wright. I mean, he should be put on a pole somewhere. I don't know. But
yeah.
I'm wondering.
That,
These lives are damaged forever. You and I touched upon this at the very beginning of the program, in which we briefly touched upon the fact that some of these young ladies will never be able to have families because they have been so physically ruined. It's the mental anguish that they're going to have to live with for the rest of their lives. This is not going to leave them. This is not going to leave them ever. And I don't know how much therapy is offered out there. This is always going to be in the back of their minds for the rest of their lives. I'm wondering, I don't know how the law works in the United Kingdom, but in Canada, I know that they could sue the authorities for punitive damages. Like, I know money will never, ever take away what they experienced, but will these young ladies and some of the young men be able to get together and file a class action suit? And
I think,
perhaps,
we touched on this before. I think going back quite a while ago now, Gavin mm-hmm. Bobby was trying to set something up on behalf of a collective of the children that we touched upon quite a while ago now. Maybe we should revisit with Gavin to see what he proposes to do. You know, as I say, he's you know, a mosque buster. He's the one that opposed
mm-hmm.
the building the mosque, and he knows how serious the gravity situation, and he spoke about it a while ago, that this is a project that he's working on behalf of the children. So maybe we could revisit with Gavin once again, and to see if he's got any, what plans he's got, if he's got anything to add to the plight of these children, because in the end it's going to be, you know, once it all comes out, once it all comes to surface, you know, we talked about towns and cities. We're talking about at least 40, 50 more towns and cities across this country. Could be work out at hundreds of thousands of children have been, had the same situation being put upon them. This could be a very, very big job, but someone needs to do it. And there needs to be justice for all the children that have lost their innocence and, as you say, damaged for the rest of their lives. And they'll probably be able to never lead a normal life because of what happened to them. As I say, we're not going to stand back on our thing. We're going to keep pushing this until we do see some justice for these kids, because it's crying out for justice. Justice to be seen and done publicly. This is what I'm saying. It's personal.
And
this is the way on.
I put the link in the chat room for everybody. That is Gavin Bobby. He is of the Law and Freedom Foundation.
Yes.
For my archive listeners, just Google Gavin Bobby Mosque Busters, and it'll take you to Law and Freedom, his website. That is lawandfreedomfoundation.org. And I think that that's wonderful, Jeff, that they're Gavin Bobby is getting actively involved with this. But one thing I do hope is that it's not only, say, private donations, as it were, but I hope that the class action takes down these authorities that covered this up for so many years. This is just absolutely unforgivable to me, and as it is with you and the people of England. This is the worst scandal, I think, that we have seen along these lines, and I can't even begin to think. But I do have something here, Jeff, that I also want to share with you, and this is amazing, and this is courtesy of DJ Davey, Bossman DJ Davey. I was at the I was speaking with Jeff and Davey last night on Jeff's show, and I complimented the compilation that he had put together with all these calls of support for Rotherham. So he sent me the MP3, and Jeff, I downloaded it into the studio. So I'm going to play this for everybody right now. This is people calling in to show their support for the EDL and their outrage, and well-deserved it is, outrage about what happened in Rotherham. And here we go, Jeff.
All right, it's a big shout-out to Andy and all the boys up in Rotherham for my boys in the VFF. So making us so proud. Keep standing there, no surrender. No, no surrender.
Hi, this is Mac Hopkins. I just want to leave a message for all the patriots up at Rotherham to let them know we're right behind you. We'll never surrender, ever, ever. God bless you all. Thank you.
Hi, mate. It's Paul. Down at the camp, Andy Edge, his phone is off. So if you want to ring him, ring this number. All right. Cheers.
Hi, it's Sonia from Surrey. I just want to say a big, 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 massive shout to Andrew Edge and all the other protesters in Rotherham. Be safe. Be lucky. Well done. Massive respect to all of you.
Good evening, Dave. It's Northampton EDL here. A massive respect to all patriots in Rotherham, Pigsty. I thought as well there. And, all the best. Sound. No surrender.
Good luck, Andy and Ian and the rest of the lot in Rotherham. Everyone else, get your fucking ass there next Saturday. EDL, no fucking surrender. From the London, Adam and the rest of the London lot.
And that is no surrender ever from that last caller.
Yeah.
Jeff, this just overwhelms
you. He's a Londoner, couldn't you, Kel?
It must overwhelm
surrender,
you.
Ever.
Ever. You know,
exactly,
but it must be overwhelming when you hear, like, this is just a, ladies and gentlemen, that was just, as Jeff and I would say, that was just a sniblet of the massive calls that DJ Davey compiled. That was just a tiny little portion. If I played the entire everything, if Davey had sent me the entire file, that would be a show in itself. But the massive outpouring of support from people all over the United Kingdom, all over, calling in to offer their bit and their peace of mind and saying that we totally support what is going on. They are supporting the rolling demo going on in Rotherham. This is amazing. This is a movement. This is what the EDL started.
That's what we were born to do, girl. This is our mission to bring justice to, you know, the innocent kids out there. You know, something we've always talked about. We are a human rights organisation. We were registered as a human rights organisation. But, you know, it becomes very personal when it's the vulnerable in our society that's been preyed upon by these predators of these Pakistani Muslims. You know, this is it. And we know there's been Afghanistani, you know, the groomers as well. You know, and then they've got everything, something in common. Islam, this way that you conduct yourself. You know, they follow that evil prophet of theirs. They want to live their life how their prophet did. They want to, you know, sort of resignate the same way that he used to do his things. That is what we've got on a global, this is what we see on a global stage now. They are putting all these things that they, you know, that they've come across in the Quran and putting it to horrific practice. And they think they're reliving back into the days of Muhammad, because they're still back in the 6th century, Kel. So they think, still think they're continuing what he was doing, you know, robbing caravans. And that's how he started off his business. And this is how he built, you know, his so-called army, you know, with the booty. You know, booty, let's talk about what booty means. Booty means to take, you know, ladies, you know, they call them slaves, and use them, you know, in a sexual, you know, sexual ways. And that's the booty. The money was there. They were robbing caravans. It became quite established business. So every, you know, people we talk to, come and join us. You know, you get a lot of money out of this, and don't forget the women. You know, the booty. Don't forget the booty. And this is the reason why they done it. And look what happened when ISIS went into Mosul. The bank there's I don't know how much was that they took, but it was a mega amount of money. I mean, millions or billions, whatever it was, they took out the bank. And this is what they've been using to fund their cause. And this is what we see today. And exactly what we see in this country is, I hate to use this, but I've heard it and I've got to say it, rape jihad. Another stage of their war.
And sometimes people refer to it as love jihad style, but I don't like that one. But you were talking about the subjugation of women, and that triggered me. It's written right in the Quran, and I'll recite this for you, Jess. O you who believe, it is not lawful for you to take women as heritage against their will, nor should you straiten them by taking part of what you have given them, unless they are guilty of manifest indecency, and treat them kindly. Then if you hate them, it may be that you dislike a thing while Allah has placed abundant good in it. And that is from the Holy Quran, chapter 4, verse 19. Now, what Allah is saying is that they cannot treat women like slaves, but they must act justly with them. Okay, that is one of the earlier hadiths. That was abrogated in that women were treated as chattel much later. Well, not much later, not too much later, because the guy was still alive and speaking. But it was unbelievable, the treatment of women. And it's right in the Quran, everybody. It's right there for everyone to see.
Yeah.
There is another one here. And the believers, men and women, are friends of one another. They enjoin good and forbid evil and keep up prayer and pray for the poor state and obey Allah and his messenger. As for these, Allah will have mercy on them. Surely Allah is mighty wise. And that's from the Holy Quran, chapter 9, verse 71. Now, like I say, these verses were abrogated. It's hard to figure out how to read that evil green book, because we know that these are not the chapter and verse that are followed in the Quran today. It has been abrogated to the point where you can start in the middle and it might start making sense. You virtually have to read it from end to front. It's just a really, really strange manual.
And plagiarized as well. The word plagiarized has got to come into that as well, Phil. You know, the way that you, as you say, it's out of context. Everything's out of, it's the wrong sequence. Out of
chronological.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Chronological order. It is. Everything's not in the right place. Everything's been moved around, and it's quite obvious that it's a total mismatch. And as I say, plagiarised, because if you look at it, you study it closely, you'll notice, ladies and gentlemen, if you look at the Bible and you look at the Quran and you study them both, you will notice that some of the stories are very, very familiar to you. Simply, they're familiar because they've took it from the Bible, different stories, but they put a twist on it that it was ordained by Allah or whatever. You know, this is how.
Yep.
They tend to do things. They play with the words, and as I say, plagiarise. And that's exactly what they've done. That's the whole thing about, you used the word Holy Quran. I would say it's the most unholy book out there. It's like
it's so
book
evil.
Of Satan. Satan's manual, how to treat human beings, with total contempt, because they do. I mean, these people out there, this is crimes against humanity on a massive scale. Billions of people have died under the hands of the Islamists, the Muslims out there. Millions, billions. I don't know the number, Kel, but you know, think of the Sikhs, the Buddhists. Everybody has suffered massively with this horrible, disgusting cult of theirs. This death cult, I call it a death cult, Kel, because all I see is bloodshed.
Yeah.
All I see is blood and evil, brutality, bestiality. The thing that totally goes against the norm of the way that civilization should conduct itself, it goes against the norm, doesn't it, Kel? Everything.
Absolutely does. And what the British authorities did is that they made one huge mistake, that they thought that they were dealing with moderates when they were actually dealing with Islamic supremacists. And this is what Islam is. It is supreme in their eyes. And you're right, Jeff, about referring to that evil green book as the Holy Quran. I should have ensured that I had my air quotes in the air for everybody to understand that I am so totally in your camp. I am aligning that to Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler, and both books should be, well, it would be required reading, but be banned at the same time. I'm not a book banner per se, but I do think that the Quran should not be as freely distributed, but it should be required reading for the critical mind. If you really want to understand what the phenomena called Islam is, you have to try to read and understand this book. If you can't do that, at least get Reliance of the Traveler. That book is always on my desk.
I was going to bring that into the conversation. Reliance of the Traveler is absolutely... I hope you don't mind me speaking to your audience out there, Kel. But if you haven't got the book, The Reliance of the Traveller, it's everything you need to know and put into layman's terms, as Kel would say. Kel's got The Reliance of the Traveller, and so a lot of things was a googly gooch when you look through the Quran, but when you look at that, it explains everything. And then you can look, you can check in the Quran, and you can see exactly, in layman's terms, when you look at The Reliance of the Traveller and you look at the Quran, you'll say, oh, yes, now I understand what that was on. See, so it's very educational, and that's all that Kells ever, and myself, you know, on our show, as we try to do is give people the education out there, because a lot of people just haven't got a clue of this evil. What they see around is evil, and they just can't understand it. That's what we're here for, aren't we, Kel? To
That's
enlighten
right,
a lot of people that what it's all about. What we're doing, the reason why we, the English Defence League, are doing what we're doing today, tomorrow, the following day, is because it's, you know, when they say, oh, the English Defence League, you know, we are basically a symptom of what they've created. They've created this situation where a good people of this country have got to say, you know what, you politicians, you've got it wrong. We've had enough. Enough is enough. And that is the reason why you see the English Defence League and the way it's actually just took off the way it did, and it's become a phenomenon in a very short time, simply because people have had enough of political correctness, which has been the destruction to our nations, you know, and I don't think that I'm over-dramatising that effect, but that has been the case, isn't it, Kel? Wherever we live, whatever part of the world, political correctness has been causing destruction wherever it's it has its evil head, and that's what I call it, an evil entity in itself, Kel. But anyway, I'm running away with my thoughts. You know, sometimes I'll get thinking and things just come out.
Are you getting your passion touches four corners of the universe, and this is why you are so well-loved, respected, and listened to. You are a man that not only knows your material, but you deliver in such a way that we know that you are a real deal. We're at the top of the hour, and we're going to be moving into...
My goodness me, has it gone that quick, Kel?
I know. Are you kidding? The two of us get together. God, remember one day we spoke for 8 hours, and we went, what?
It's true. Ladies and gentlemen, as I say, myself and Kel, we've been friends for a long time, and we've had our ups, we've had our downs, but we've spent a lot of humorous times as well, haven't we? We've even had our own karaoke thing going on, ladies and gentlemen, you know.
What does the fox say?
Hey, Kelly, I haven't heard you swear tonight. You've suppressed that a little bit, haven't
I? Oh, for fox's sake.
You said fox's sake. I mean, that's not swearing.
What does the fox say? Oh, gosh. Oh, man.
As I say, we also had a little bit of light-hearted, you know. We do get, we went to some dark places, and makes you very despondent sometimes, but you know you've got to rise above it, and
we've been through the gauntlet, my dear friend. We and that's the thing, Jeff and myself, we are, I could not do half the things I do without his encouragement, and Jeff, I want to thank you so very much. We're going to move into the second hour if I can. But I want to take a bit of a musical break. I'm going to be bringing on Michael Green on in the second hour. Would you like to stay with us, or do we have to let you go?
Yeah, I will, but I'll have to do what I normally do. I've just noticed.
All right.
I'm at the top of the hour thing.
Right,
now.
You are.
When I tried to call in early, I was having a few problems. I had to call in four times before I actually got through.
I noticed that in the studio. Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird, Kel. But hopefully I'll just reconnect and away we go again. So, yeah, I would love to take a musical break. Have I got time to make a cup of tea, Kel?
You sure do, because I have a song that I would like to share with everybody. And this is actually from To Where You Are. This is, I'm dedicating this to the young girls and the boys that were victims of these Islamic sex grooming gangs. I want to thank Jeff so very, very much for joining me and taking so much time. It's late for him, but I said, Jeff, thank you, Jeff. We're going to take that break right now. You bet. And we'll see everybody back here in 3.5 minutes.
Thank you. can say for certain? Maybe you're still here. I feel you all around me, your memory so clear. Deep in the stillness, I can hear you speak. You're still an inspiration. Can it be that you are mine forever, love? And you are watching over me from up above. Fly me up to where you are beyond the distant star. I wish upon tonight to see you smile. If only for a while to know you're there. A breath away is not far to where you are. Are you just faith believing all power can't be seen? As my heart holds you just one beat away, I cherish all you gave me every day. 'Cause you are mine forever, love, watching me from above. And I believe that angels breathe, and that love
back, everybody. You're listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Kel Fritzy. My guest this first hour, of course, has been the very prolific Jeff Mitchell of the English Defense League radio show. We want to thank so very many people that have joined us, and that is A12 Iggy Mom, Agador the Unpleasant Blind Guy, Bigfoot, Bond, James Bond, COG, David Niven, Doc, English Defense League, of course, that's Jeff, George Lisenby. We have a guest in here, Holger Awakens of the Awakening, Machi, Moving Forward, Preparty, Roger Moore, Smokey from Texas, and my Annie, who is Southern Sense, is Common Sense. I also want to thank people that are listening in the studio, and that is my Sweet Sue from New Mexico. We're moving into the second hour. The first hour, you had been listening to Jeff dissect for the North American listeners about the sex grooming gangs that has been going on, the latest, the most devastating one recovered in Rotherham, England. Jeff has been instrumental in helping me dissect this because I had a lot of trouble with it for a couple of weeks. I found it very difficult to speak about without virtually bursting into tears. But I was able to approach it in a somewhat more professional manner than what I would have been able to do 2 weeks ago. So, Jeff, I want to thank you so very much. The second hour, we are going to be discussing the Islamic State, and Michael Green is joining us, and I would like to welcome him to the program and quit spinning wheel. There we are. Michael, how are you tonight? I got you and Michael, and BTR decided to put Michael back on mute. I don't understand.
Oh, no, sorry, Carol.
Okay. Three times you win or three times and you're out. But, okay. It just, there we go. For some reason, Michael Green, could you hang up and dial back in? Because for some reason, Blog Talk Radio keeps putting you back on. Oh, hang on. I think I've got him now. I hope I do. Oh, nope, his call dropped. I just got him, and he's going to dial back in. Blog Talk Radio really does have a mind of its own. Got to love live radio. Woo, yes, hey, baby. But, yeah, I hope that everybody enjoyed that song. That is a beautiful song, and that is dedicated, of course, like I say, to the victims, and hopefully they will be the survivors of this devastating event that took place in Rotherham. And I think we have Michael back with us. And hey, Michael, hi.
I am here.
Oh, good. Could you hear all the clicking going on every time I tried to unmute you?
I heard a beep sound, but that's technology.
Yeah,
not
there
perfect.
You go.
I believe
so
Jeff
glad
Mitchell
that you're joining
is
us.
Thanks. Yeah, is
mm-hmm.
Jeff Mitchell in the studio there?
Yep, he's right here. Want to say hello?
Oh, I absolutely do.
Hey, Michael.
Jeff.
How you doing, buddy?
I am great, my friend. I've been thinking about you, and it's good to hear your voice. I'll tell you, today I had an interesting experience. I ran into one of your countrymen, and he had much to say about the troubles in England with the Islamists, and it was a refreshing and great experience to meet someone from the UK. He's from Yorkshire, and we had much to discuss and whatnot.
Yeah, it's... I'm sorry, people are talking about spiders in the chat room. It's throwing me off what I was going to say to you. But, no, it's once again, it's always great to talk to you, Michael. As you know, that the story broke of what we've been talking about for quite a number of years, and it's resonated. It's woke a lot of people up, because some people decided that... That what the establishment was doing, I mean, social service, the police and that they knew what they was doing. And all the time, as I said before, it was a conspiracy of silence. No one wanted to raise their voices, speak out against these Pakistani Muslims in case they get classed as being racist. So this is taking the lid right off the thing that, you know, at one time we was vilified. And now we've been totally justified, Michael, for all the things that we've been speaking about for many, many years. And it seems sad that at this time, all the time we've been speaking about it, these things was going unabated. No one was dealing with it. Everybody was suppressed or trying to keep it silent. And all the time, as we were talking about the first part of the show, that young girls and boys were being abused on a daily basis and being passed around and being trafficked around from city to town and cities. And it's out there now. And it's, you know, the thing about it is there's a lot more to come, Michael. You know, this is just one town. There's 40. We know that for sure. We know definitely there's over 40 other towns and cities in this country that has been affected, it's been blighted by this total evil entity, and it's been facilitated by the councillors, by the police, by social services. The whole of these people have let the children down. It breaks my heart
to think of the plight. So, but it's so good to talk to you this evening, Michael. I know you there's some good things that you want to speak about this evening, but it's so good to talk to you as well tonight. And thank you, Kel, for letting me have a chat with Michael. Bless you, Kel.
Absolutely. And, Jeff, thank you so very much once again. And, ladies and gentlemen, just to apprise you that you can listen to Jeff Mitchell of the EDL Radio Show right here on Blog Talk Radio and other devices, Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 p.m. British Summer Time. Jeff, you have been instrumental in helping me get through this because I would not have been able to do it on my own without you, sir. I so appreciate your...
It's more, you know, to be there. You know, you're a dear friend of mine, Kel, and sometimes when we do shows, and we've had shows before that we found it very difficult, that you lean on each other, don't you, guys? And you know,
mm-hmm.
Well, me, Michael, you lean on each other for inspiration and the things that makes us tick, that makes us push forward. And so, you know, as I say, you've always been there for myself, Kel. I'll always be there for you. And for people like Michael, for, you know, this is what we're about. You know, we are a global community, for goodness sake, aren't we, Kel? We are, you know. And so, yeah, it's been me honour to be there with you tonight as well. Thank
Absolutely.
You very much, Kel.
Thank you, Jeff. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to leave your mic open. But Michael has some news that he would like to impart, and I would like Michael to go ahead with this. This is pertaining to the Islamic State, Michael, isn't it?
Correct. I want to begin with a speech made by the President of the United States. I really shouldn't call him that. We'll just say Obama. It's hard to give him that title of respect and honor. But that's what's in the news this week is a speech that was made, and it affects all of us dramatically, all of us who are concerned about the future and most of all concerned about this massive terrorist state called the Islamic State. They're not a group. They're not an organization. They're not a bunch of ragtag, wacko jihadis. They are a well-organized Islamist terrorist state that controls swaths of land, has massive financial resources. It's now been reported that the earlier reports that they had in the neighborhood of 10 to 12,000 fighters were incorrect, and the accurate figure to date would be about 31,500 fighters that are part of this juggernaut of death and destruction that we are facing now. The most serious threat that the waste the most serious threat that the West has faced since the time of the Ottoman Empire. The United States has always been the nation to lead other nations in campaigns to take down other nations that were a threat, warfare, and so forth. I say that humbly. You know, Americans need to be humble, not arrogant, and we want to understand now that we have leadership of the most powerful nation it is, with the most vast military resources, that does not want to acknowledge who the enemy is, does not want to confront them properly, you know, bring war, unleash the dogs of hell to their doorstep. And I'm going to go through his speech point by point, and I'm going to show our listeners where it is going to be a complete failure. This is the Obama six-point plan. Point number one, he claims he's going to significantly expand the bombing campaign in Iraq. Right now, the United States has only conducted about 120, maybe 130 airstrikes. That's basically a joke. When you're at war, that number of airstrikes would probably happen in a serious military campaign within 24 to 48 hours. And that's happened over a span of 45 days. All these strikes have done so far is to take out some artillery pieces, some armored vehicles. It's taken out a certain number of ISIS fighters. A couple of top people were taken out, three total, but they're easily replaced. Through contacts on the ground, I know for a fact that if we take out 200 fighters that are fighting with the Islamic State, there's another 200 waiting in the wings immediately to replace them. And it's just not going to do the job. Also, the fact that ISIS is entrenched in population centers, they're in Mosul, that's kind of their base of headquarters in Iraq. They're in Ramadi, Fallujah. You know, you can go on the Internet and see a map. I don't want to name every town and every section that they are in Iraq, but they're controlling a massive area of that country. So the idea that they could be defeated or even hurt without, you know, bringing in a ground force at some point is absurd. We're not going to bomb those cities and incur, you know, massive collateral damage, and that's what it would be. So bombing in Iraq, as he says he's going to expand it, I want to know how he's going to do it and what is he going to do. And how is he going to take out the large numbers of their fighters that are controlling these cities when they're mixed in with the population? Okay, let's go on to point two. Said now he's going to train and equip the Iraqi and Kurdish fighters. Let's look at Iraq first. Americans spent large sums of money, a lot of military equipment, to train the Iraqi army. It turned into an utter failure. Four divisions of Iraqi soldiers more or less put down their weapons and ran away when ISIS began its military assault in June. 9 out of 10 Iraqi soldiers are worthless. That's also from a contact on the ground. People who, I got to be careful what I say, are there. That's all I can tell you. And the Iraqi army is just not an army that's going to fight. You know, they're just not going to do it. And they have a couple of special forces units that are kind of tough fighters. But, you know, as a large infantry unit, and that's what you need, of, you know, really hardcore fighters, but you need people motivated. And there's a lot of cowardness within the Iraqi army. And I'm not trying to denigrate every Iraqi soldier, but these are the facts. And this is what we've seen unfold in the past 2 months, you know, since the Iraqi army has been trying to fight back the onslaught of ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, working that into his plan, it's a terrible decision. And it's not going to accomplish anything. ISIS captured a lot of equipment that America gave to the Iraqi army that they now possess. So I would not, I wouldn't spend a dollar of U.S. money, and I wouldn't spend time training them. I'd work with their special forces units, you know, ones that are vetted, can be trusted. And
yeah,
that's how that would go. Let me move on to the Kurds. The Kurds are in the northern part of Iraq. They're called the Peshmerga. That's their military
mm-hmm.
force. Great fighters, very motivated, and very brutal, too. They are, I don't want to say they're as brutal as the Islamic State people, but they're pretty brutal. And I guess that's how they have to be. I'm not going to sit here in judgment of them, you know, what they do when they take on the ISIS fighters and, you know, things they do after they kill them. That's not something we need to be concerned with. We need to be concerned with providing them with heavy weapons. And to date, Obama has refused to do that. As a matter of fact, the Iranians have been supplying them now. So the problem is with American foreign policy, if you don't step up and go to the people who really are going to be an ally and people you can count on in a serious military campaign, you know, someone else is going to look to fill that vacuum, and Iran already is kind of in there. So I'm not optimistic about what he'll do with the Kurds. If he really was serious and was going to give them a lot of military hardware and heavy weapons too, not just ammunition and AK-47s, you know, they need some serious military hardware so they can fight. Also, one last point on the Kurds, they're only going to fight as much as their territory goes. They're not going to be like a proxy force that's going to go out into many other sections of Iraq and look to uproot and eliminate ISIS where they're entrenched. So that's another bad decision on his part. He claims he's going to begin bombing in Syria. And I say that with trepidation because right now, Obama has an obsession with not wanting to look like he's going to be doing something that will support Assad. Although the right actor, the best actor in Syria to deal with is Assad, you know. Look, the guy's a ruthless dictator, but he's not a jihadist. fanatical, you know, Islamist killer. And we're not going to do anything with him. In fact, what we're going to do, besides this alleged, you know, bombing in Syria, which I'll see it when I'll believe it when I see it, is the other part of his plan is to arm and train Syrian rebels. 2 years ago, there were many we call secular rebels who are looking to overthrow the Assad regime. To date, there practically are none. They're all different factions and groups of Islamist fighters. You have Jabhat al-Nusra, which is the al-Qaeda affiliate. You have the Islamic Front and many others. And, you know, they're all basically Islamist terrorists. Why would we want to give them weapons and military training? Very bad idea. And they're not going to take out ISIS at the end of the day either.
No, they're not. And yeah. These airstrikes are going to be useless. When I was speaking with you, pardon me, when I was speaking with you and Tom O'Halloran the other night, and we were talking about boots on the ground, you and I initially disagreed, but you and your logic and what you had to say is swaying me. Oh, Obama's speech the other night, my eyes literally glazed over. And, you know, the two things that stood out with me is that this is not Islamic, and ISIS is an aberration of Islam. Like, no, this is Islam. But his speech, it was the speech heard around the world, of course, and his airstrikes idea is already being condemned, Michael, like the Syrian government in particular. Moscow, Tehran, they warned Barack Obama that an offensive against the Islamic State within Syria would violate international law. Like, so I don't understand this. So Obama wants airstrikes, but he's going to violate international law?
Yeah, it's absurd. Look, what kind of airstrikes are we talking about? Once again, the headquarters for the Islamic State in Syria is in an area called Raqqa. And once again, it's mixed in with the population and any other areas that they control in Syria are predominantly mixed in with civilians. You know, you could say that they are legitimate targets, maybe the ones that are, you know, supporting them. And, you know, look, the fact is there are people in Iraq and Syria who don't support the Islamic State and been slaughtered. You know, they've been beheaded and massacred and had their, you know, brains blown out, you know, been shot, like summarily executed. So the idea we're going to bomb them in Syria. Well, that's okay, but once again, exactly where are we going to bomb them and how are we going to do it? Not that he needs to tell, you know, you don't tell your enemy what you're going to do in advance. But it's not, I mean, what kind of plan is that just to say we're going to bomb them in Syria? It's an ambiguous statement, and like you said, it'll be violating international law. Question is, will Congress go on board with this? He's going to come to Congress, and he's going to see if he can get Congress to vote, I believe, on his plan. Within this plan for Syria includes a request for $500 million allocated to arm and train alleged Syrian rebels who are really Muslim terrorists. So Obama wants to put in the hands of our enemies different kind of weaponry. Now, one thing about Western forces, the UK and America, we've always owned the night. And we own the night because of our, you know, special optics, our, you know,
yeah,
our night vision equipment. And believe me, that makes a major difference on the battlefield. ISIS doesn't have that kind of technology. I would be very concerned about putting that kind of technology in the hands of so-called rebel fighters who may at some point, you know, jump ship, leave Jabhat al-Nusra or the other groups and go with the Islamic Front or, of course, be killed and have that technology captured, put in the hands of the Islamic State fighters.
Now, you were talking about the support of Congress or lack thereof. Now, from today, it looks like both the liberals and Democrats, or, you know, Republicans and, both parties, rather, Democrats and Republicans. In Canada, they're called Liberals and Conservatives, so my apologies to the listeners. But both sides of the spectrum have already condemned his speech from Wednesday night. He said that he would welcome congressional support. But this is his expanded, but it's limited. It's a limited plan to destroy ISIS. It's limited. I was speaking with Annie of Southern Sense today about this on her program, and I said, I'm wondering if that Wednesday speech was nothing more than code speak to the brothers, telling them just to take it down a notch, tone it down. I can't see how anybody can support these measures.
Yeah, it's absurd. Let me make a really important point that I just found out about in the past 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of inside information. Okay. He's approaching Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is a key player in the Middle East, of course. They're the site of Medina and Mecca, the most holiest sites. You can't really call them holy, but I think everyone knows what I mean. In Sunni Islam, you got King Abdul, you know, the House of Saud, you know, the monarchy there. Okay. Now, many people don't know this, but within the Saudi royal family, which is very vast, and there's many, many phenomenally wealthy people within that group, they're not all against ISIS. The truth is that a certain percentage of them, maybe you can divide it down the middle even, are supportive of them. And then you have the ones on the other side in Saudi Arabia, who of course are not. They're very fearful, and they don't want to see the Islamic State, you know, bring a battle to Saudi Arabia, and they've said they're going to do it. I mean, they certainly intend on doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that Obama's going to work closely with the Saudis, you know, kind of bring them into the loop, is very troubling. And in the event that it does come to fruition, and let's say we establish some kind of military base there, because that's probably why we would want to work with the Saudis, the question is, who's going to wind up on that base? What kind of people besides our personnel are going to have access to that base? And if we have any Saudis...
That's a burning question, yeah.
Yeah.
And just to let you know, we have a caller on the air, and let's bring them in. And this is 8636. Hi, what's your name and what's your comment? And would you please like to address Michael Green?
Yes, this is Stelosio. I would like to... ask a question to Professor Green about implications for the Ukraine. There is obviously a problem with the Muslim world, but what is the implication for the war in Europe and the actions you are suggesting tonight of American state?
The ramifications are that if the Islamic State is not dealt with overwhelming military force, at their current rate, they are growing exponentially. They have vast resources. They earn about $1 million to $2 million a day in selling oil on the black market. They have a massive recruiting campaign that's been going on for many months in social media. This social media campaign has enabled them to recruit young Muslim men and some women globally, and thousands of them have left their respective countries in Europe. There's probably about 300 to 400 Americans on the ground in Syria and in Iraq, and they pose a serious threat to the West because of their stated intentions to bring their, what they call their jihad, their holy war, to our lands, you know, and we already saw one occurrence of it in Belgium. There was a man who had gone to be part of the Islamic State. He was able to return into his country, into Belgium, and he went to a Jewish museum, and he murdered four people solely because they were Jews. And that was, I would say, a small example of what we can see in the future. If this terrorist state, because they're not a terrorist group, they're a terrorist state, is not dealt with accordingly. Now, your second question is, what should we do? Well, what we need to do is we need to let our generals map out a thorough military campaign that will include ground forces at some point to defeat the enemy, you know, to take them out. I don't know your background, sir, but they're slaughtering Christians. They're slaughtering other Muslims, okay, Shia Muslims. They've slaughtered Sunni Muslims. They basically will kill anyone that is not on board with their ideology, you know, their beliefs. And I would say that it's time that the West wake up and pull up their pants, you know, get themselves up by their bootstraps, grow a pair, and understand that we are at war, and war means that you need to go and you need to take your enemy out. You need to destroy them utterly.
Well, thank you for your remarks, but I was asking about the Ukraine and what is the implication.
Oh, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. I didn't. Well, the Ukraine is a completely separate issue. I mean, it's not within the scope of the Islamic threat. What's happening in the Ukraine, my opinion is, and I don't want to get too caught up in it tonight, but this is something that has to do with Russia and the Ukraine. And
but how can we ignore the interdependencies between what is happening in the Middle East, which is a big problem for everyone, and the Ukraine?
Well, you know, look, the fact is what's going on in Ukraine is bad, okay? You know, people's lives are in danger. We're not ignoring that. But the people in Ukraine don't want to bring a global jihad to my doorstep, or I don't know where you live, or your doorstep, or Jeff Mitchell's doorstep, or Kel's doorstep. So what's going to happen in the Ukraine, it's a separate issue. It's not going to affect what we're focusing on right now, and that's the threat that this terrorist state poses.
But Ukraine problem is not going to go away because we focus on just taking care of this.
Well, what do you suggest we do?
It's not going to go away.
Do you think the United States should intervene militarily?
It's not going to go away. Winter's coming, and there's nuclear weapons, and there's people dying in Ukraine, and we are ignoring it.
Well, I just asked you, what do you think should be done?
I'm asking you, Professor Green.
I'm not a professor, sir.
You're a very smart man.
Well, God's smart. We're just trying to do our part. You know, we're in the most consequential time of the 21st century, coming out of the 20th century, and we have to have a strong resolve, a steadfast faith, to speak out against this extreme brutality. Once again, what's happening in the Ukraine, it's a problem. There are people who've been harmed, and there's the separatist movement. You have the Russian separatists in the Ukraine who want to, you know, be with Russia, and then you have the other side of this. And it's just not something that I feel I can get into much more detail, to be honest with you. I haven't researched it in enough detail. I don't want to misspeak.
Thank you for taking this information to me tonight. So I have to go, but thank you.
Well, thank you very much, caller. We appreciate your time, and please continue listening to the program.
I'll call you again.
Thank you very much. We'd appreciate that. And I never did catch his name, but that's okay. I hope that Michael answered your questions, caller. Michael, would you like to move into the rest of your dialogue or monologue, as it were, in this case?
Now, in the last phase of this absurd plan that Obama came up with, he made a point of saying that U.S. troops are going to stay out of this fight. Now, let's take an example. We have people over there are going to mentor, advise, train, work closely with the Iraqis. The Kurds, we're already there, we're already working with the Kurds, and they come under hostile fire. Well, what are they going to do? They're going to return fire. Of course they're going to do that. And, well, what will Obama say when our people have to engage the enemy because the enemy's engaged them?
Mm-hmm.
He just sent another 450, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just wondering. I was just referring back to this article. And yes, I do understand that Obama wants the cooperation of Congress, and I don't think he's going to get it, though. If he does not get the endorsement of Congress, where does this go from here? Does this just fall on the floor again, or what's going to happen with this proposal?
Well, you're spot on, because some of the key Republicans in the House, and some, of course, senators, but for example, I'll cite a guy named Howard McKeon. He's the committee chairman for the House Armed Services Committee. Actually, that didn't make sense. He's the chairman for the House Armed Services Committee. And he raised some very important questions, just like you are. You know, where is this all going to go? And if Congress doesn't go on board with this, and I don't think they're going to, I think there's going to be a lot of opposition, you know, for things I identified, and these other individuals will raise similar points, or they'll elaborate and expand on, you know, what we're focusing on tonight, and why should we back up this plan that from the get-go looks like a plan that's going to fail, it's going to accomplish very little, we're going to have to spend U.S. dollars, so why do we want to invest money and time and even put some of our people in danger when it doesn't look like it's going to get the necessary results? So you raised a good point. And it's going to be interesting moving forward to see what the House of Representatives is going to do and how they're going to deal with this. Obama's going to try to sell it to them. He's going to pressure them. We also have elections coming up, so we got to watch this very carefully, because it's all going to be about politics, which is tragic,
yeah.
Because, you know, innocent human beings have been slaughtered and have suffered immensely, and they're being slaughtered and they're suffering right now as we speak from the hands of these, you know, barbaric people.
I was listening to Annie of Southern Sense today on her program, and, I sit with her and Dan Butcher and Annie of Southern Sense. They have their wonderful show, and I call in, and I'm the one that sits there in case things go south. Play on words there, Annie. But they were discussing this very, very speech, and Annie brought up something quite interesting. In that 9-minute speech, not once did he bring up the word war.
Well,
I don't
absolutely.
Know what...
Yeah, no, he didn't. Let me add something quickly that ties right in. John Kerry just met with some people in Saudi Arabia, and he was interviewed just the other day by a journalist. And let me read to you what this idiot said, because the man is an idiot. He's
okay.
A disgrace. So Secretary John Kerry refused to state that the United States is at war with ISIS. He spoke to a CNN correspondent in an interview, and he made the following statements. He said many different things that one doesn't think of normally within the context of war. What we are doing is engaging in a very specific counterterrorism operation. Now, to be blunt, this is a load of crap. I mean, you know, counterterrorism is something you would think for the homeland, which is what we have. We have the FBI counterterrorism task force in each major city and different police departments. We have counterterrorism task force. Yeah, how you apply that to a situation like this with the kind of conditions we're facing, it shows a terrible disposition of this government and the unwillingness to acknowledge what we're dealing with, you know, who they are and the threat they pose. And they have this fear, this cowardice of it stating we are at war. And if you don't make
and
those
I just want to correct something on sidebar. Annie of Southern Sense said that I do not listen, I co-host. So I do co-host on Southern Sense, so I just wanted to correct that. So sorry to cut you off in midstream there, Michael, but Annie's right. I am part of the Southern Sense team. So carry forth.
Yeah, just to wrap it up, not to spend too much time on Mr. Kerry. It's simple. He said, we're not at war. He's the Secretary of State of the United States, a very powerful cabinet position, and this is what he's made clear. Of course, because his boss certainly made it clear to him that that's going to be the known policy of the Obama administration. Now, of course, we're at war, because if you send fighter jets and you bomb another country, that's war, right? Isn't it?
Of course it is. Of course it is. And ISIS, by the way, they're not Islamists either, you know, because this has nothing to do with Islam, of course.
Well, you know, if Barack Obama, who claims he's not a Muslim, although there are tapes of him where he said he is a Muslim, so, you know.
Well,
if he's
is
a Muslim,
by birthright.
Yeah, by birthright he would be, and if he's not practicing Islam, he would be an apostate. Correct. But it's not for the president of the United States or any country to determine what is or is not Islamic. You know, the fact he even went there, it's just sickening. It shouldn't be part of any speech he makes, especially in the context of saying that they are not Islamic. Now, he calls them ISIL.
Yes, ISIL, the Islamic State of Syria and Levant.
Right, the Levant. Now, not to get in a whole discussion about that, my take on this is that he will not call them the Islamic State ever, because that's who they are. He will not call them ISIS, because ISIS is the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Now, you know why that ended? That ended because ISIS literally took that border out. There's no more border, so therefore it is an Islamic State that spans the northern part of Syria and goes into the various areas of Iraq. So it is under their control, you know, their authority. It is an Islamic State in its purest form, because what's so important is the Sharia. And in every square inch that they occupy in Syria and in Iraq, they have implemented the Sharia.
I have another question for you. We are so close to the end of the program, and there are so many questions I have for you, Michael. One, though, was jogged by Iggy for me in the chat room, and that Obama wants a coalition. Germany and Britain have already said they will not join such a coalition.
Absolutely. I mean, the foreign minister of England, I don't recall the man's name, the foreign minister, not the prime minister.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff would know who he is, I would think. But anyway, the foreign minister now of the UK made it clear that he's not interested in this and they're not coming on board. David Cameron said something a little less strong. I think, I can't find the quote right now, I think he gave an indication that maybe, but it doesn't look like the British Parliament, and, you know, we should ask Jeff's opinion in a minute, because if they have to give a vote, if the British Parliament has to vote on whether the UK comes onto this coalition, I think it's a dead deal. I don't believe they're going to come into the picture. Anyway, Obama gave a complete false impression in his speech that there's going to be this massive united coalition. And that's just a lot of garbage, because it's just not going to happen. It really shouldn't need to happen.
Yeah.
It shouldn't need to happen, not to be arrogant. You know, look, it's simple. If other countries don't want to get involved in this war, guess what? I said the word war. If they don't want to get involved in this war on this, you know, barbaric state, well, then that's fine. You guys can sit it out. I mean, if I was a commander-in-chief, that's how I would be. We want you to come on board. You know, these are the reasons why I'd make my case to them. But at the end of the day, if you don't want to come on board, we're going with you or without you.
Well, I don't see any I don't see how Obama made any difference, and this is not going to bode well for us on the global stage. And I believe the foreign minister's name is Philip Hammond. I'm not too sure.
Right, but you know, look, it's terrible, it's tragic, it's not really humorous, because the suffering that's been imposed on these people in Iraq, the Yazidis, the Christians, you know, Shia Muslims, just on human beings by these barbarians is really unparalleled since the time of World War II, you know, when the world saw horrific and grotesque atrocities being perpetrated on other humans. And they have now also, ISIS has a weapons of mass destruction department. You know, they're very well organized, and they are actively seeking to acquire some kind of WMD, whether it's chemical or biological, you know, or whatever. Well, time will tell in the next number of months, you know, what's going to happen. I don't see a ground force going in there. And there's questions, should a ground force go in? My only reservation is I don't want them to be constrained by bad rules of engagement under no circumstances. But if it was possible that they could fight and do their job and not have their hands tied, I would support a ground offensive 1,000% with a sustained bombing campaign. Look, right now we have one carrier strike force group in the Gulf. It's a joke. There's one aircraft. And you just can't do the job. You know, you can't do the kind of nonstop, round the clock. You got to do it round the clock, sustained bombing, if you want to hurt the enemy. And after you've done your sustained bombing and artillery and pounded them mercilessly for an extended period of time, then you send in your ground force. And that's how most wars are conducted.
Absolutely. So did we learn anything from Obama's big speech on Wednesday? Did we learn anything at all, Michael? Or are we just wallowing further? Did Obama put us on a course that we can stay, or did he just muddy the waters even further?
It's just window dressing. That's the tragedy. It's just a lot of window dressing. Underneath the surface, it's empty. There's nothing there.
Unreal.
In the event that if there's a terrorist attack in America, or God forbid, in some other country, you know, perpetrated by these people, if some other type of, you know, well-publicized horrific atrocity is carried out by them in Syria or Iraq, maybe, and I have to say reluctantly, maybe, you know, he may be pressured to the point when he. Point, excuse me, where he really has to do something. You know, certain military actions will need to be taken.
Yeah.
At this time, it's a joke. One quick point. As I said, the Islamic State now today probably has in the neighborhood of 30,000 fighters. Obama said in the past 2 days after his ridiculous speech that he's sending another, now get this, 450 U.S. personnel. So, I mean, if you were an ISIS fighter, would you be concerned? 450? And there's what?
Are you kidding?
You know,
I'd be wiping them off the bottom of my boots.
Yeah. So it's pathetic and it's embarrassing. You know, as an American, it's disgraceful that at such a consequential moment, at such an essential moment in time in our freedoms being threatened, that this man is such a despicable individual that he's not going to stand up and take the fight to these people. And the purpose to take the fight to them is to save lives. You know, people don't understand. War is to save lives in the long run, is to save people from being oppressed and tortured and killed and slaughtered.
Absolutely, and I wish we had more time to touch upon this because, like I say, when you come on, I sit back and I listen because I'm learning. I have so many questions for you. I wish that we could do this show for another 2 hours because, believe me, there are so many unanswered questions that I have, the listeners have, that people will probably be pondering for, you know, quite a while. But, pardon me, next week is another day, and Michael Green will be back next Friday, and we're going to dissect some of this. But, Michael, I really want to thank you for being here tonight.
Well, I want to thank you for having me back on. Excuse my voice tonight. it's just a little tired. Just in summation, briefly, because I know the clock is ticking, I just want to say to everyone listening in the chat room, please pray for our nation and pray for our brothers and sisters across the Atlantic. Pray for the people who are in Iraq now, who are in harm's way in one way or another. They're not on the battlefield specifically. And anytime you, throughout your life, if you come across a person who's a veteran, please go up to them, look them in the eye, and give them a really heartfelt thank you. Shake their hand and tell them how much it means that they served and they risked their life, you know, for the freedoms that we have. And boy, do we need our military today. If we ever needed these exceptional, brave men and women, we need them today to bring the fight to our enemy.
Absolutely. And, Michael, please do, ladies and gentlemen, please do that. We are done for the program. It is Friday evening. Please go to Halls of Valhalla next, right after this program. Smokey and Golf Dogs, they have a Benghazi special going on there. I put the link in the chat room for everybody. I am out of here for the weekend. Everybody have a wonderful one. I will see you back here Monday afternoon at 3 p.m., where my fellow host, of course, is Tim Burton. Thank you all very much for joining us. We will see you back here at the Red Fox Vlogger, where I fly solo sometimes, Friday at 7 p.m. And, of course, we will see you Thursdays at 1 p.m. at the Islam Exposed, where my fellow hosts are Tim Burton and Dave Milner. Thank you, everybody. We'll catch you later. Good night.